Hello and welcome back to the Innovation Room. I am Daniel Guajardo and I am here with Rhiannon Huff.
Hello, everybody.
Derek Tobolsky.
Hey, hey.
And we are back, but we're back in a different way. We are now digital because numbers have been increasing in our region in Indiana, and we want to take every precaution we can to be safe and make sure that we're doing everything we can for our part and for our company to minimize the spread. So, without further ado, Rhiannon.
Well, guys, in the next few weeks, we will be talking about industries, different industries, and how they have been affected in 2020 and what we can expect moving forward to 2021. First one we're going to tackle is, of course, our own industry, which is the signage and manufacturing industry. And in the upcoming weeks, we will be hearing from many other experts in the restaurant and retail sectors. So, Derek, why don't you tell us a little bit more about what we're talking about today?
Yeah, actually, I'm excited about this whole thing. The idea of getting to talk to some other people is exciting. No offense at all, but really. Like Rhiannon said, though, today we're going to talk about the manufacturing industry. Many things have come to mind when you're thinking about the future of the industry, including COVID, the skills trade gap and shortage, the potential growth. Another topic we're going to cover today is the recent and past legislation rulings that affects regulation of local codes and or restrictions within the jurisdictions.
Let's get into it. Since nearing the end of 2020, we wanted to take an episode to discuss many factors that come to mind when thinking about the future of the industry. COVID, recent legislation that affects regulations, and the skills gap, which has been discussed for years by manufacturing executives. We have a very special guest with us here today, as you can see, President and CEO of North American Signs, current Vice Chairman and upcoming Chairman of the Board of ISA, International Sign Association, and the former Chairman of the Board of Sign Research Foundation, Mr. John Yager. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks Good. For inviting me, Dan.
We're happy to have you. Can't wait to get into this. We have some lovely stuff to talk about today. But first off, I'm going to ask you a question just to pick your brain right off the beginning. What book have you read that's impacted your life that you would suggest others should read?
There's many, but certainly The 7 Habits from Covey has had a huge impact on how I operate and my habits and has contributed a lot to the success that I've had.
I was assuming that would be one of your top, John, knowing that as North American Signs employees, we all go through a 7 Habits training, something that we've all enjoyed and definitely taken pieces from. So with that being said, thank you for sharing. We're just going to dive right into our first topic, which of course, first one that comes to mind is COVID. And how has COVID affected signage and the manufacturing industry in general?
Yeah, well, a lot depends on where you were. Different locations had different guidelines and shut down in different ways, as we all know. And most of the industry is small or mid-sized. So much of it depended on your location and what your state decided to do in its shutdown. It was dicey at first, I think, for everybody. We're all trying to figure this out and scramble. Many sign companies were deemed essential, and eventually the entire industry was deemed essential. So that helped us stay in better shape than a lot of other businesses. A lot of companies also shifted and were making restaurant signs for takeout. Some shifted their operations to make face shields and social distancing graphics and different sneeze barriers and shields. So all those types of things, I think, helped the industry stay afloat pretty well. I've heard various, we're down some, we're up some, it'll be an okay year, we're flat, depending on their local shutdown orders. Work still seems to be holding up okay, but I think there's a lot of concern about next year.
Mm-hmm. For sure. Can you expand a little bit, maybe even on maintaining safe facilities for workers and what North American has done?
Yeah, so we immediately had a lot of the office go home and work remote from home. We spaced out people on the shop floor and have certainly implemented masks and other things when you can't socially distance. That and the daily cleaning routines, pretty standard things. Luckily, we have enough space, and a lot of manufacturers did, because what we're building is large enough that we have shops that are a size that can handle people being distant most of the time. So we've actually come through it relatively well.
Yes, we've been really lucky in-house for sure. So what about supply chain disruptions? Anything there that specifically sticks out to you? It's been a hardship?
It was interesting. There were a few things here and there. It was very spotty. Much of the industry didn't see a huge supply disruption. Certainly there was concern about LEDs from China and other things from China. And there were runs on some, especially clear plastics and things like that. But for the most part, I think the industry escaped that to a large degree. And I think we have a really good distributor base that was able to support us well.
Yes. So how will these impacts, do you think, change the industry in 2021?
Well, it depends a lot on the course of the virus, of course. if we can get some vaccines in place and start to feel a little safer, if everybody wears masks, I think we have a shot at continuing to come out of this. But obviously the numbers at this point aren't going in the right direction. And hopefully they flatten out and come back down soon. But I think it's going to impact the industry a fair amount. You know, certainly a lot of businesses are holding off making decisions, but we also see a lot of businesses moving forward. We've actually seen some startups. We're seeing some new restaurants take spaces that have opened up. And I think we're going to see other businesses move in. And obviously when real estate changes over and new people come in, they want new signs. So that's helpful for us.
Absolutely.
I think we're all hoping that COVID's in our starting to be in our rear view here and we get to start seeing growth in those areas. What else do you see, or are there any other things that you see significantly impacting or changing the industry for 2021?
So there's a big shift, as we all know, to online ordering and curbside pickup and things like that. That accelerated, you know, COVID accelerated that shift dramatically, moved us forward probably 5 years and 6 months. And that's going to continue to impact certainly real estate and how the real estate comes back. So we're going to have to adapt, but generally people look for those spaces and look for ways to fill gaps. And I think we're going to see a slow but continual need for signs and sign services across the spectrum. And of course, we do need to be just adjusting to our customer needs. We need to be providing new graphics. Everybody, with all the social graphics that have gone up and the floor graphics and distancing and, you know, even parking lot wayfinding signs and curbside pickup signs and all of that, there'll be more opportunities. We have to keep looking for them and figuring out ways to provide our customers with what they want.
All great points, John. Of course, the world of signage has changed outside of COVID as well, believe it or not. And some of these changes have happened inside of the courts surrounding local signage codes. So if you don't mind, I'd like to switch gears over towards that for a few. Navigating local signage codes across the country is a constant battle for sign companies. Most all local jurisdictions across the states have different requirements, rules, and restrictions that can become difficult to navigate and to adhere to. In some cases, the local jurisdictions, their code can seem to be heavily restricted and even burdening to new companies trying to get noticed. I'd like to touch on what recent legislation has done to help signage laws in specific areas across the country. How has recent legislation affected signage regulation issues like those?
Yeah, Derek. So there's several things going on, and a lot of it stems or is a fallout from the U.S. Supreme Court case, Reed versus Town of Gilbert. If people remember, that was about temporary signs in Texas, in the Texas town of Gilbert. Basically, the court determined that placing limits on temporary directional signs that were more stringent than other types of temporary signs was a content-based regulation of speech, because they said you had to look at the content of the sign to know if it was commercial or political or informational. So that was a really strong decision. The Supreme Court really supported it across all the philosophical factions of the court. The slapdown they gave in the language of the opinion, and the fact that it came from all corners of the court really forced lower courts to look at the case and to follow it without much hesitation. So there's been a lot of fallout from cities trying to reestablish or readjust their temporary sign restrictions to be content neutral, but it's really flowing through the whole code now, is trying to find ways to make that code content neutral, which is very hard for cities that have typically regulated directional signs differently from identity signs, differently from all these other types of signs. They can't do that anymore, theoretically. So it's causing a lot of changes on the local level.
In my signage world, we get a lot of questions surrounding on-premise versus off-premise signs, and more specifically when off-premise signs are allowed or if they'll be allowed. Most of the time it's not, and that can be really frustrating for our clients that have minimal street frontage. Is there anything being done in that area?
Well, we're seeing a lot. We're actually seeing some cases now that are taking the read language of the content and saying that whether a sign is on-premise or off-premise, you can't know that without looking at the content of the sign. There's Lion's Den versus Kentucky. There's Reagan and Lamar versus City of Austin. And there's International Outdoor v. City of Troy. All these cases involve on-premise versus on-premise distinctions in sign codes. And the courts are starting to strike these down and say it's not content neutral, and therefore these codes are unconstitutional. And it's causing a lot of consternation and will cause a lot more. It's only really begun. The fallout of Reed has only just begun.
Are there any variance allowances that they talked about, like allowing certain instances where they would allow these things?
Yeah, so International Outdoor v. City of Troy is interesting because not only did they address the on-premise, off-premise distinction, they also looked at the variance procedures, the exception procedures, and generally cities have broad discretion to allow variances to their zoning codes, and the sign codes generally fall within that. But the Sixth Circuit in this case held that signs as speech protected under the First Amendment cannot be subject to such a lenient or unspecified standardless review. They found it arbitrary. So this is going to cause other courts to look at this language, and perhaps cities are going to have to come up with a totally separate way to review sign variances that would be less arbitrary than the current sign variance regulations that are in effect today. So this just happened, and we're going to have to see how it rolls out across the country and whether the Supreme Court backs off of it at some point, if there's an appeal that far. It's going to be very interesting to follow. The next few years could be very dynamic for cities as they change sign codes.
I can't wait to see, because it seems like signage code is different. I mean, it is different everywhere we go, and it can be really difficult to navigate sometimes, and difficult for not only the subcontractors or the signage vendors that are in those local areas, but also the clients, getting them to understand as well why things can change, from block to block so significantly. How do you think businesses and business owners can prepare for signage code challenges here down the road?
Well, hopefully sign companies can lead the way. We need to be paying attention to what's happening on the local level to our codes as they get rewritten. We need to be involved in that process. ISA has a legislative resource department that helps with these things. So we need to all be supporting each other to find ways to be involved and make effective arguments at the local level as these sign codes get changed. And certainly local businesses, if we can help them understand that this is a bigger issue than just them, and either have them help press the chamber to get involved or for them themselves to get involved. A lot of times cities look at this as sign company issues, not general business issues, but it's really a general business issue. So we need to be emphasizing that.
Where do you see the courts going with this issue moving forward?
So this is an interesting question, right? Where do things go? Big question. for the industry and for really on-site and bricks and mortar retail as well. Traditionally, there's a split between political speech and commercial speech in the courts, and commercial speech is not protected as much as political speech. So it's going to be interesting to see if the courts rediscover this distinction between political speech and commercial speech and allow more restriction of commercial types of signs than they are in general with the content-based restrictions. At this point, there's no indication that's going to happen. So if this continues down the same line and the Supreme Court doesn't come back and say that commercial signs can be regulated in a different way, it's going to have a really far-reaching effect and limit the amount of regulation that can occur.
Wow. Okay. So I guess bringing it back more internal, you know, there are other challenges faced by the sign industry, specifically those sign companies who manufacture custom signs in-house. And by this, I mean, you know, the skilled trades gap that we've been seeing in US, it's been a hot topic for manufacturing for many years, really. How will the skills gap affect manufacturing companies' bottom lines?
Yeah, the skills gap has definitely been a hot topic. So if we can't attract the workers we need, it could affect our ability to grow. You know, manufacturing jobs, we have to adapt to rapid changes in technology at this point. Things are happening really quickly, and many of our current workers aren't prepared for it. So it's going to take an investment in training. It's going to take with people we already have in-house, it's going to take an investment in training with people that we hire. And our education system only gets people so far. You know, skilled labor still isn't seen as a real popular, viable job field, and it really is. So we really need to be working on that. Overall, I'm bullish on the industry's ability to attract workers. Sign manufacturing days that have been going on for a number of years now, and training that ISA has developed puts us ahead of a lot of industries in being ready for this and working towards being able to find the employees we need. But we also have to change our mindset as employers. We're going to have to invest more time and more dollars to train and attract the people we need.
Yeah, definitely. So there's been, you know, rumors or talks of, you know, companies even turning down new work or potential clients because of the shortage of laborers. Is that something you feel will continue, or do you think these changes in education and these changes in training will be able to kind of negate that in a sense moving forward?
Some of it's regional. I think there's regions that are really struggling and regions that are doing a little bit better, but I think it's going to continue until we get really good at being able to attract people and convince them that these are really worthwhile jobs. These are not entry-level jobs. These are skilled labor, and we're going to put the effort in, and we have to show them that we have the training resources, and we're going to take the time to invest in them, to give them skills that will serve them. If we can show them a path, I think we'll be able to attract people.
Yeah, I agree. And that's a great answer. One more question. Do you think COVID will impact the number of people entering the skilled labor workforce in the manufacturing industry?
So short term, it's definitely going to impact the number coming in, partly because everybody's being cautious in hiring. Nobody wants to be hiring people they don't need, and onboarding is challenging. You know, training, generally you need to be close to people, you need to be showing them things. It's not that it can't be done, but it's certainly challenging. I see this mainly as temporary. We're soon going to need to be finding new workers and expanding our workforces. And so the issue is going to return pretty quickly. With any luck, there'll be a pool of workers that's available to us because of the backlogs and people not hiring. But I think it's still going to be a challenge.
That's a good point. I don't think that this problem or need is going to go away anytime soon, personally. And it's certainly not the first or last time it's going to be a hot topic issue, needing more skilled labor workers. But do you think we can solve this need for the skilled employees long term, or will it be more of an ongoing issue in our industry?
A lot of it depends on us. It's going to take more forecasting, figuring out what we need going forward, and thinking about those skills and spending time and effort to work with the educational systems and continuing to develop our training ability in the industry to adjust and really overcome that skills gap. Overall, I think we're a fun and dynamic industry to be in. We need a wide range of skills, and we offer a lot of different positions from design to estimating, accounting, project management, you know, manufacturing, welding, inside, outside. It's really kind of cool how much we have to offer as an industry. We create beautiful and artistic displays, period. And that's fun to be a part of, whether you're, whatever role you play in that. So if we can make it cool to be a sign manufacturer, a sign maker, then we can attract and out attract other industries. We can attract workers that are going to be happy to be with us and stay with us. And if we can do that, then the industry is going to be strong and be able to move forward. So we have a good start, but we've got to invest more time, more energy, make more relationships with educational institutions, and keep it going.
Yeah, that's a great answer and great points. You know, well, given the time, I'm going to have to cut it off here. I want to say, you know, the feedback and insight that you provided today on these topics has been extremely beneficial. I want to thank you on behalf of me and the rest of the team for your time and allowing us to pick your brain a little today.
It's been a pleasure. Good to see you guys.
Well, that's it for episode 8. Thank you guys for watching, and we can't wait to see you again next week. But first,
glad to have you here. If you want to let us know what you think, we'd love to hear your comments. If you have any ideas for future shows, please let us know.
If you like us, love us, hate us, want to see something different, want to just say hey, go ahead and like and subscribe below and make sure you comment.